Would members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would clerk please take the roll?
16 members present, Mr. Speaker.
The Most Reverend Michael Kinney, Bishop of the Roman Catholic Church, Diocese of Juneau, will lead us this morning in the invocation. Would you please rise?
Let us pray. O God, we thought that spring had come and winter had passed. But then many of us thought that oil prices would stay the same, or that Tom Landry would be with Dallas forever. In practically every scene, life is full of surprises and unexpected happenings. As individuals and as communities, we need to be flexible and adaptable. Potential growth and sometimes survival itself require an ability to bend and a willingness to change. But there have to be some constants. It is one thing to alter perspectives, quite another to sacrifice fundamental principles. Through all of the vicissitudes of life, we need to be true to our word, faithful to our friends, and unshakable in our commitment to what is right. On two scores, we need your help badly. Guide us in knowing what is changeable and what is not. And when the issue is clear, give us the courage to stand fast. Amen.
Mr. Brown, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Boucher? Is the roll still open? Hearing no objection, so ordered. The clerk please certify as to the correctness of the journal for the previous day.
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 74th, 75th, 76th, 77th, and 78th days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 74th, 75th, 76th, 77th, and 78th days be approved and certified.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Are there guests to be introduced today? Are there messages from the governor?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other house?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Other communications?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Are there reports of standing committees?
There are no reports.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
Citation honoring Yvonne Marie Alford, March 30, 1989, by Senator Fakes and Representative Barnes. Citation in memoriam Ronald Chin by Representatives M. Davis, Kopanen, and Boyer. I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference to House bills?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
The House, please stand at ease. Please read the first item on today's calendar.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 159 by McLean, Cato, and Zawacki, an act relating to an exemption from municipal property taxation for natural resources in place and providing for an effective date. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered the bill, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by McLean Chairman, concurring Cato, Pettijohn, C. Davis, McLean, and Foster. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by the co-chairs Larson and Hoffman, concurring Hoffman, Larson, Swackhammer, Brown, Ulmer, Barnes, Phillips, Rieger, and Wallace, signing no recommendation, Kopanen and Schultz. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the sponsor substitute for House Bill 159 be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, and placed on final passage.
Mr. Majority Leader, I think we're lacking the votes. We don't have 30 votes on the floor, so we'll have to leave it in second reading. And it'll appear on tomorrow's calendar in third reading. Mr. Furness?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I did have a few comments, if I may share with the body at this time on the bill, if it's
an order.
We'll stand at ease.
Without a motion, Mr. Speaker.
The Majority Leader has withdrawn the motion to advance from second to third reading on the same day. The bill will appear on tomorrow's calendar in third reading. Mr. Majority Leader, citations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are four citations on today's calendar honoring Kathy Swenson, 1989 winner, Alperob International Sled Dog Race, honoring Ms. Melissa Sue Waldron, Alaska's Junior Miss 1989, in memoriam Dr. Charles James Sternhagen, and in memoriam Herman Porter Sr. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations be approved.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the citations on today's calendar have been approved. Is there unfinished business? Representative Barnes?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to bring up a special order of business at this time. Special order being a citation honoring Yvonne Marie Alford.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Representative Barnes?
Mr. Speaker, I move the citation and ask unanimous consent.
Unanimous consent has been asked for the approval of the citation honoring Yvonne Alford. Is there objection?
Mr. Speaker, I just object just for the purpose of making a very minor correction.
Mr. Lehman, you have the floor.
Thank you. On the next to the last line, actually three lines from the bottom, capital should be spelled with an A, with two A's. And I'd like to make that change in the citation.
The clerk can handle that administratively. Okay, thank you, Mr. Lehman. Is there a further objection to adoption of the citation? Hearing no objection, the citation honoring Yvonne Alford has been approved. Is there other unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader?
A couple of requests for excused absences. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the members be excused on the days mentioned. Representative Grunberg from Friday evening, March 31st through Sunday, April 2nd. Representative Cato, extend excusal through playing time Thursday, March 30th. Representative Miller from Friday, March 31st through playing time Tuesday, April 4th.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, those members are excused on the dates indicated. Other unfinished business? Mr. Representative Barnes?
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I would like to request that that the chief clerk hold that citation for a few moments for people to add their names as they see fit.
Are there unfinished business? Are there announcements? Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to announce that Representative Ann Sponholz will be the speaker this noon at the Bill Egan Forum. That is held every Tuesday at noon at the Baranoff Hotel. And again, Representative Sponholz will be the speaker today. Thank you.
I'll announce that the House has initiated a hearing this afternoon at 4 o'clock in House Finance to hear about and inquire about the oil disaster in Prince William Sound. The administration will provide representatives from the Department of Environmental Conservation, Department of Law, and Department of Fish and Game. We understand that Alyeska Pipeline Service will have a representative at the meeting, as will Exxon. We've invited the Coast Guard and the National Marine Fisheries Services to participate. So all legislators are invited. Particularly, I've requested the committee chairman of the appropriate committees of jurisdiction to be in attendance, but it'll be open to all members of the legislature at 4 o'clock this afternoon, House Finance. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today at 5 o'clock, assuming that the meeting you just referenced is over by this time, in the governor's conference room, the Subcommittee on Environmental Conservation will attempt to close out the budget recommendation for FY90.
Are there other announcements? Are there special orders? Mr. Davis?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to speak about Easter Sunday.
Mr. Davis, you have the floor without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Easter Sunday in the morning, I had the, I guess, the privilege or the opportunity to visit Valdez. And I had two purposes to go down to Valdez. One, I wanted to see the extent of the, as what's been termed the largest oil spill in North America, the extent of the damage, and to see what the long-term implications would be with that oil spill. That was at then day three of the oil spill. At that time, the spill was about approximately 100 square miles. I had the fortune to fly over the spill area, which if you look on your maps, it pretty much was concentrated between Blight Island and Naked Island, approximately 10 by 10 square miles slick of oil. It was the third calm day in Valdez, and at the time, there was many nervous people because, one, there was probably less than a mile of boom material, not all of that in place, but as I said earlier, there's over 100 square miles of a boom, and everyone, scientists, oil people, certainly fishermen, were concerned because the wind was going to come up and it was going to start moving. Easter Sunday evening, the wind did come up. The Exxon Shipping, which is now in control of the spill, if anyone is, planned on Monday to hit it with everything they had. They planned to hit it with dispersants, with all the oil booms that were available in North America, or that they could get there, and to try to contain it as best as possible. As you probably heard, the winds came up Sunday evening, and the airport, were for all intents and purposes, was closed. By the time that the people started flying yesterday afternoon, the oil it was, as you see it on the map, by last evening, the oil was down by this next large island that you see on the maps on your desk. It's I can't remember the name of the island, but it's a Night Island is the name of the island, and it had washed Naked Island and those two islands that are in front that you see there, and the island that's it's this heavy shoreline oiling. It's now past Night Island by this morning, and it's headed towards some of our hatcheries. And in addition to that, it's no longer in the consistency of an oil slick. It's now broken up in what people term a chocolate mousse. It's more of a peanut butter or a pudding or whatever you want to call it. It's very difficult to pick up by any conventional means. I did bring with me videotapes that were shot yesterday afternoon by the Department of Environmental Conservation, and I look forward to joining with you, Mr. Speaker, at the hearing at 4 o'clock. I will, if for any of the members that would like to see it, I will show those videotapes. We have videotapes of day one, when it was flat calm, day two, day three, and yesterday. But the situation now is on the beaches, and what the department's wishes is they're trying to protect as many bays as they can. There's some real logistical problems to that, but it's they're trying to make the best of a very bad situation. But there's some things that I would like to share that I have learned, and I'm sure there'll be more as time progresses. But one thing is that the oil companies flat out did not have the ability to respond to that spill. There's absolutely a need for greater oversight by this legislature and by state agencies. We have taken the oil companies at their word that they had the ability to respond. And the last point I'd like to make is there was a total, absolute failure by Alyeska Pipeline to respond to that, who had the jurisdiction. And there'll be a lot of discussion about that, but I think there's a need for us to have our own strike force in place and let the oil companies prove that they can do it. But in the absence of that, we need to have something in place to respond to it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Furness.
Mr. Speaker, I request and ask consideration that I be permitted to speak on the same subject.
Without objection, Mr. Furness, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's no doubt that the mishap in Valdez was indeed an unfortunate chain of events. I, like many of you, have been watching the news reports very intensely over the last several days, and I realized several things, Mr. Speaker. When we consider the amount of resources that have passed through the Port of Valdez over the years and the absence of any large catastrophe as we are currently experiencing, I think we can consider that to be at least a blessing. One thing we need to be aware of is that we should not, out of haste, castigate the oil industry for a very unfortunate chain of events. As I listen to national news, there is some indication that this spill could indeed affect future oil and gas developments, at least oil developments in the state of Alaska, and principally the transport of that oil throughout the state. And when you consider that Alaska, according to those reports, provide about 20% of the oil resources consumed by the United States, we can see here that the resources from this state is a very, very important element in providing for our energy inventory. I would simply ask here, Mr. Speaker, that we consider that, as far as I'm concerned, and I think history has will support, that the industry has been responsible and responsive in the past to disasters. And in this development plan, there was no way of anticipating a spill of this magnitude. And whereas I agree that there may have been some hesitation, my reading of the situation is that they were waiting to determine the proper method by which to control it. Either do you use chemicals, at which time I understand there had to be rough seas in order to absorb it and to dissipate the oil at that time, or do you boom it? And needless to say, there were not sufficient boom to cover the some 100 square miles. So while I agree that we need to take additional precautions, I think we also need to proceed with a cool head and understand that this is an unusual chain of events and that we are an important element in providing energy to the rest of the United States, and that given time, I believe that the state and the industry will respond to this disaster and put in place a mechanism in order to control it in the future. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader. Mr. Majority Leader, without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Time is one thing that we didn't really have in this instance. If the response had been immediate, perhaps the measure of this catastrophe could have been controlled somewhat. And, Mr. Speaker, this, to me, what this reminds me of is an oil spill that took place in Cook Inlet a couple years ago. The response there was woefully inadequate also by the industry and the support staff that was in place to take care of this problem. If it ever came up, it was going to be handled in an immediate and very quick manner. It didn't happen in Cook Inlet. It didn't happen in Valdez. The fact of the matter is that the industry and their credibility with respect to oil spills in this state has been undermined by the two accidents that have happened in the last couple years. And I will be at the hearing this afternoon listening to both industry reps and the people from Alyeska to see what they can do to convince me that if this happens again, the response will be adequate. And what's to be done now to try to mitigate the damages? As I mentioned, it was woefully inadequate in Cook Inlet. And it was, again, inadequate here, and will this state and this legislature and Alaska and its people will have to bear the burdens of that failure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask permission of the floor to speak on the same topic.
Yeah, without objection, you have the floor, Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Debate in this body does not bring back fishing livelihoods. Quick responses to the types of disaster that Alaska has faced over the weekend do. And that, Mr. Speaker, is part of the problem. Where was that quick response? Why was there such an inadequate and a slow response to the emergency that we experienced? If the barge was broke down with the equipment that should have been available any place in Prince William Sound in 5 hours, why wasn't it there? It's true, to cast aspersions gets us nowhere and brings no livelihoods that are lost back. And to point fingers and blame is sometimes counterproductive. But this body must get to the bottom of how to respond to the kinds of environmental disasters that we have recently experienced. Back in 1976, I recall a statement that I made. The people of Alaska should not be hoodwinked into trading a non-renewable resource for a renewable one. And much to my regret, Mr. Speaker, I still think we have a long way to go to ensure that the technological state-of-the-art capability to deal with the kinds of disasters that we see presently in Prince William Sound, we have a long way to go. Thank you.
Mr. Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, this is a moment of tragedy for our state. We don't seem to do things in a small way when they happen in the state. They happen in large ways. But we have talked about reaction and response, and I, for one, would like to commend you, Mr. Speaker, for the prompt action that you have taken in calling this meeting this afternoon, because I think it is, has been pointed out by previous speakers, that it's going to be essential to gather information on both what didn't happen and what should happen in the future. And I appreciate very much the rapid response, especially with the holiday weekend, that you've taken in bringing this thing under control, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Copeland.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak on the same topic that everybody else has.
Without objection, Mr. Copeland, you have the floor.
Thank you. 2 weeks ago, I was in Valdez for the first time after the earthquake, and while there toured the water treatment facility that intended to deal with ballast water, and accompanied by other legislators, looked at the situation there and also observed the tanker anchored across the bay that was had started leaking while it was being loaded. And of course the question came up, what happens if that happened out in the bay? We were assured that of course the response would be quick, response would be immediate, response would be effective. And of course we have had some reason to believe that it appears that the response that the tanker got when they ran into trouble on Bly Reef was take two aspirin and call us in the morning. But that's neither here nor there at this point. But I was very impressed by the fact that efficient as the water treatment plant may be, that the problems of that nature cannot be solved with a more Buck Rogers technology on land, although extra holding tanks would be welcome at this point with the pipeline continuing to pump. But need to be resolved with the improvement in tanker technology. I think that one of the things that we have done with the Jones Act and the Merchant Marine Act in giving a protected status to the American shipyard industry, especially in the tanker trade, is to freeze technology largely at the 1930s level. There have been, not just in tankers incidentally, we do not manufacture icebreakers, we need them here. Icebreaker technology has moved ahead. It's a very specific portion of shipbuilding technology. But one of the things that was mentioned while I was there was that those tankers that had bladders in the tanks segregated the ballast water automatically. And in that respect, they did not have to treat the ballast water from those tankers. And they could just pump out the water as they were coming. It was much faster, much more efficient, and less danger of pollution of the environment. The same thing, of course, is true if such a tanker is damaged in an incident similar to happened on Bly Island. If the bladder are contained in the oil holes, most of them would not have been damaged. Some of the major ones may have been would have been damaged, but nevertheless, there would not have been the amount of pollution available. And we have seen the use of those bladders not just in container ships, but we've seen them used in the North Sea and the Rhine River as a primary means of transporting crude oil and fuel oils of different descriptions. Much more efficient in smaller quantities to tow those bladders with tugboats. It's much more safe because the bladders being flexible and being made of reinforced rubber compounds and rosins give instead of tearing. And yet we continue to build ships the way we built them for the First World War and for the Second World War. But we haven't moved ahead because our industry is protected. Competition of foreign shipbuilders is not allowed. And yet the American shipbuilding industry has not survived. I started my industrial career working in Bestseal Shipyard in Hoboken, and that is now closed. Most of the shipyards that worked up and down the East Coast have closed. We have a few small protected yards, very well politically protected by the senators from the different districts. But they do not turn out a product that helps the United States remain competitive in the merchant marine. They do not turn out a product that saves us from disasters such as we have seen. What we need is to open up and apply high technology, which we boast of, to the American shipbuilding and ship design industry. Thank you.
Mr. Hudson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't going to speak, but since everybody's kind of relating sea stories here, I thought perhaps I'd add one, too.
Without objection, you have the floor, Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps people don't go back quite as far as I have with this. In 1970, I was the Coast Guard captain in, of the Coast Guard cutter Sedge in Prince William Sound. And we were testifying, I was testifying, as to the safety and some of the concerns that we would have in order to have a good, safe movement of these huge tankers through that body of water there. And one of the concerns that I believe the testimony will show was that in that whole funnel area that centers down into where it cuts through the gut going into Valdez Harbor there is probably the most critical area that we have because it's from one point, it's, I think, probably one of the world's finest red and pink salmon breeding grounds. It's also an area that is heavily impacted by winds. I don't personally want to try to prejudge, you know, what happened, but I personally hold the captain responsible for this situation. If he wasn't on the bridge, I certainly would want to know why not. The fact that he might have had a third mate up there who, under normal circumstances, would be qualified is not enough for me. Why didn't he have a pilot on board? You know, they used to be, and one of the things that we testified was that when they come in and out of that area there, they have a pilot. And for the longest period of time, I believe they even had a pilot boat that went in and out of there. I'm also concerned a little bit as to why the Bligh Reef wasn't better marked. And I personally want to find out if there was some justification why there isn't a buoy on that reef. I don't know what happened in this instance. I want to find out. But here's the circumstances now that can literally wipe out years of fisheries production and marine mammals and a lot of our seabirds. And I look to the captain. I think you always have to look right to the top of the bridge there. So I'm going to be looking at it, and I think we just need to kind of stand back a little bit and see what all the circumstances were. Nothing ever happens according to just general plan in Alaska. You know, look at the whale situation up to the north there. It took them days upon days before they finally got any kind of heavy equipment out of there. They finally had to call the Russian icebreaker in literally to cut a hole to get the whales out of that area. And everything that I've ever seen in Alaska has been like that, whether it be an oil spill or anything else. We almost have to quadruple normal response in order to make certain that we can even basically try to protect the environment and protect our interest up here. So I urge all of us not to get too angry until we know all the details and then try to set up a corrective measure that guarantees or at least tries to assure in the future that we can protect from this kind of thing recurring. Thank you.
Mr. Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I would hope that this is certainly a disaster, and I would hope that out of this disaster, we get a message that is delivered not only to the members of this body and to the state of Alaska, but also to the President of the United States. And what I'm referring to is Lease Sale 92 in Bristol Bay. I would hope that this would send a message to people indicating that the oil companies have not been truthful with us. They've told us over the years that they can respond swiftly and effectively and efficiently if anything like this were ever to happen. And obviously they can't. They've proven that to us now. So I would hope that, if nothing else, this would send a message to other members of this body and that they would join me in objecting to the Lease Sale 92 in Bristol Bay, and also that it would send a message to the President of the United States, letting him know that the oil companies have not been truthful with him or with anyone, and that they are not able or capable of handling an oil spill like this, and that it would possibly stop Lease Sale 92 in Bristol Bay. Thank you.
Mr. Davis, Ms. Floor again.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to say a couple of things.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One is that DEC did approve an oil contingency plan in 87 for responding to a 200,000 barrel spill. And so it was on the books, and this is a catastrophic oil spill, but it was one that there was a contingency plan drawn up to respond to it. The second thing is that I did have some conversations with the commissioner of Departmental Environmental Conservation, who was going to drop everything to come down for a budget hearing, and I assured him that I felt his best place was there and not to come down to talk to the legislature. And I think that it's going to be difficult to get the information this body needs at this time, given the resources that are being used. And I don't think any of us want to divert any of those resources away from that. So I think it may be some time before we get all the information that we certainly deserve and need to make important policy considerations. Thank you.
Are there special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning, we're going to be, yeah, that's right. We're going to adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.